We're back! Welcome to No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, and I'm joined by...
Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gaming, and an empty chair.
No. All right, so today's episode, we are here to talk about the other half of the role-playing game that isn't completely based on combat, or for in Starfinder's place, Starship Combat. It's the skills, the thing they added to the game to show that you're not just really good at hitting things with pointy metal objects, or space pointy metal objects, or lasers. This is also how you are good at making NPCs give you their stuff without killing them.
Yeah, if you're running a good campaign, skills are kind of arguably the most important part, in my opinion. Just because, you know, in a campaign that's really fleshed out, skills are like how you do normal people things. Because your average person in a town is going to be terrified that you have, like, a 7-foot-long Gatling gun. And it's going to be like, oh, man, please don't shoot me. But, like, when you get right down to it, that's just going to get the cops involved. That's not how you actually, like, progress and, like, meet people and do things and complete tasks. Like, combat is what you do when all else fails. At least in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about it, Param.
Yeah, I understand, and I totally agree. Like, my home games are usually 90% role-playing and maybe 10% combat. It's usually how I like to handle them. Of course, that balance changes completely when I'm doing, like, Starfinder Society or public games or any sort of AP. But the thing about understanding the skills is this might just seem obvious to a lot of us that have been role-playing for a long while, but you have to remember that Starfinder draws its direct lineage all the way back to the Chainmail War game that D&D is based off of.
Yeah, so, it does.
Honestly, the whole concept of any sort of skill system is actually bolted on. 3E did a great job of adding a, at the time, modern-like skill system with points and spending to the game, whereas in previous editions it was just role attributes, or you had proficiencies that just said, I was good at something, and then role attributes if it mattered. And now we had, with the advent of the D20 system, we have an actual skill system, and that has been carried forward into Starfinder, mostly intact.
Yeah, I think 4th edition changed how skills work. I think they moved to a proficiency system, but otherwise this system has been, like, the core skill system in 3.5-based games since 3rd edition.
4th edition still kept the basic structure of the skill system, but you tagged the skill once and it automatically leveled up.
That's right. That's what I'm thinking of. Because you had, like, a proficiency bonus, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And with Starfinder, we're still dealing with the traditional 3E skill system, though based off the Pathfinder variant and with its own little twists.
It's actually really interesting because, you know, Starfinder is a game that borrows heavily from others, you know, from Pathfinder Unchained subsystems. You see it in Afflictions, you see it in basic class design, you see it pretty much everywhere. And Pathfinder Unchained had like 2 or 3 skill systems. They are not present at all. This is a classic Pathfinder skill system.
You could argue that the Starfinder skill system is really close to the condensed Unchained skill system because they did. There's a lot less skills in Starfinder than there are in Pathfinder, and especially the knowledge section. They grouped a lot of the knowledge skills together. And the other thing you see that they've moaned about for years as a restriction of the Pathfinder D&D 3 lineage is that all Starfinder classes start with at least 4 skills per level. And this is going to be extremely important, even more so in Starfinder, where you have to adapt to a world of technology and modern conveniences and future conveniences. If you pay attention to any sort of sci-fi setting, what your character is good at doing is usually so much more important about what defines them than how well they point the gun at things and pull the trigger.
Yep, totally. Because anybody can have a gun.
And just, everybody does in Starfinder.
Yeah, you're just not as good as the soldier at shooting it. That's okay. Soldiers are awesome. And
soldiers
they get 4 scorings.
Awesome. And they can snipe with heavy particle cannons.
Yeah. So how, like, I imagine that there are going to be some people who are watching this and they're going to be saying, oh man, Alex Parham, I've never played any of the 3.5 games. Starfinder is my first. I don't know anything about this skill system.
Oh,
we should
probably
accommodate those people, shouldn't we?
Well, yes, we should. So in Starfinder, there you have a list of possible skills, of which there are many. And you, when you create...
I will count while you're talking.
And you, when you create your character, your class has a list of skills that are their class skills. And you are allowed to pick from any skill, not just your class skills, a number of skills equal to however many skill points you get per level based on your class, usually from 4 to 8. And you also get an extra skill point every time you level, including first level, based on your intellect.
The answer is that there are 19 skills plus a 20th skill, profession, which comprises an infinite number of sub-skills.
Yes, yes. Profession is the all-catch-all of I need to be good at something that's not listed here.
Yes, it's the kind of minor, kind of? I don't know. I don't know if I'd call it minor. It's a skill that's really, in my opinion, way more GM fiat than any other skill.
True, but it's also super important because it's the one skill that almost every NPC is going to have.
That's true. Most people have jobs.
Yeah,
you know, it's not the Starfinder world's problem that your PCs are like hobos going around shooting people and taking their things.
We may be playing Star Trek Bridge Crews, but we are not living in a Star Trek society where working is no longer necessary and is only used to advance society.
Yay! Choking grip of capitalism.
Yay! Oh, gotta earn those credits. Church of Abadar wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, no, Abadar would not let the Federation get their way.
No, no,
it's very true,
and it's a lot less boring this way.
That's true. That's a very good point. So, again, if you're new to skills, the basic idea for them is that you have these points and you invest them, and points correlate into the bonus you have. You roll a d20, you take up your total bonus from your number of ranks plus any other abilities or class features you have. You add it to the result of the roll, and that's your skill check result. Your result tells you whether you succeed or how well you pass or how horribly you fail.
Yeah, and if we're going complete newcomer friendly, every single skill has an attribute associated with it that you add the bonus from that attribute when you roll that skill. For instance, computers is intelligence based, and so you would add your intelligence to your skill ranks to any bonuses you have together to your roll when you roll a computer's check.
If you're doing profession has 3 possible attributes that you pick each time you take a skill,
and those are
what profession skills or what attributes?
The attributes.
Oh, it can be intelligence, wisdom, or charisma based on what kind of job you're doing. The Pathfinder game gives you like a very specific breakdown of common skills per attribute, but it's not really super set in stone, and you can pick what makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that works because when you're doing a lot of these different professions, it makes sense that different people bring their strengths and what they're good at to their job. Like, if someone's a teacher, for example, since I work in education, some teachers are really good at academic knowledge, and so those people would probably do profession teacher with an int-based thing. But some people are really good at inspiring and motivating their students, and that's how they make kids successful. That's more charisma. And then if you're a wisdom-based teacher, you're probably good at intuiting the problems your students are having and noticing different things that are going on in the classroom, like behaviors, and you might be a little bit better at managing behavior. So that means you might be a wisdom-based teacher. I like that. That's one of the changes in this system that I think was a really good one. If you've never played Pathfinder, this might not mean anything to you, but to Pathfinder fans, Starfinder's version of the profession skill is basically Pathfinder's craft and profession and perform all rolled together into one skill.
Right.
So, like, you can have perform musician, which covers pretty much all of the performs in Pathfinder, with the exceptions of things like oratory and whatnot. Professions tend to be jobs rather than things or fields like they are in Pathfinder. But the end result is that it's just a little bit more flexible. And let's be honest, in Pathfinder, players confused all the time whether a skill would make more sense as a craft or a profession, because it's like, I want to be craft glass bottle blower, And it's like, well, I guess that's a craft, but like there are no rules for blowing glass bottles. So is it really a craft skill? Is that a profession skill? What is this? And Starfinder just kind of shirks the whole issue by being like, it's all in this one skill.
And to be fair, Pathfinder shirked the whole issue of craft by having the universal craft rules that don't work.
You know what? As someone who's used the ones in Pathfinder Unchained, they are much better.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I like the ones out of Ultimate Campaign a little bit better when you start using the resources as a reward system. But that's all Pathfinder stuff. We're here to talk about Starfinder stuff.
Yeah. So an interesting rules change in terms of language, not really in like how the skills work, but most of the skills refer to the different like ways you can use that skill as skill tasks rather than just being like, this is a use of perception. So tasks can be anything from like the athletic skill, making a check to swim is a skill task. Swimming is a skill task. Or some skill tasks are covered across multiple skills, like identifying creatures or crafting items. Those all have a single standard rule set in the front of the chapter, but get referenced under individual skills based on what type of like items that they can craft or what types of creatures they can identify. It really helps to slim the word count of this page and to add more information to skills as they make sense.
Yep. And it really is a more trimmed down skill section, even in terms of the rules, where a lot of it is unified. There are a lot less skills. The skills that are there cover a broad sense. Like, gone is the fly skill. It's been wrapped up in acrobatics, but it kind of makes sense. If you're good at maneuvering your body, just because you added wings and seven arms and a tentacle nose to that body doesn't mean that you are less graceful at using it.
Let me tell you, as the author of the Skill Challenge Handbook for Pathfinder, I love the fact that the athletic skill exists. Because not only does it take climb and swim and give back jump to being a strength-based skill, which is helpful and useful, but it also makes it so, like, if my players say to me, oh, I want to play baseball with that guy because it's the future, they might want to play baseball. I can say, roll opposed athletics checks, you know, rather than having to like make up something. There's like a skill for being athletic. I think that is one of the best combinations. Perrin mentioned that compared to older editions of the game, Starfinder takes a lot of skills and combines them, just like Pathfinder did to 3.5. That is, I think, one of the strongest ones that I've seen in terms of its combos.
And again, one of my favorite mergers of rules, in fact, this has made running Starfinder so much easier than running previous iterations, is the knowledge and identifying critters skills. Whereas in previous versions of the game, there was like a whole bunch of knowledge skills, like 6, 7, 8 of them. And every single creature type had its own knowledge check. And just memorizing that list as a GM so that you ask for the right knowledge roll when they come up to some horrible many-eyed monstrosity was tough. And I admit to even I still have to look every now and then and go, now which one is it for oozes? Oh right, that's dungeoneering.
Right. And it's part of it is that like the original system wasn't really future proofed. Like, and even to an extent the Starfinder one might be a little wonky in some places, but it's much better. Like a good example is Paizo introduced all of the cool robots with the technology guide in the Iron Scott Adventure Path. And in Pathfinder, they're constructs, so you use Arcana to identify them. But they're explicitly not magical.
Yes, my magical mind will identify those clockwork robots.
Yeah. In Starfinder, they make knowledge engineering, which is now just called engineering, a lot more useful by saying, hey, you can identify robots with this. Okay. It works.
And that makes the most sense. So how it works in Starfinder is there's really basically you only have to ask yourself 3 questions about a critter, and it's going to be obvious the second you lay eyes on it, most likely. Is this a natural or breathing thing? Well, that's a life science check. Is this thing alive? Life science check. Is this thing a robot? If this is in any way a robot or a virus or an AI or some technological thing, you go over to engineering. And is this thing wonky magical nonsense? Well, in that case, it's mysticism. And physical science can just get right out. It doesn't have anything to do here.
Nope. Physical science is about, like, geometry and like math and, like, quantum physics.
Yeah, when we get to some non-Euclidean critters, then you're going to want your physical sciences.
Oh, God! No, we're going to go to the two-dimensional plane from Wrinkle in Time. Oh. No! Everything is physical science! But yeah, no, I think that making everything just life science makes life so much easier. Oh. So much easier.
Oh, that pun is bad.
Yeah, it was. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry, though. No, it's just, it's better. And because it's one skill, and it's a skill that very clearly has the niche of, this is the skill for knowing things about most critters. Mm-hmm. A couple more esoteric critters are under esoteric knowledges. I'm going to call it intelligence-based skills knowledges sometimes. Sorry, guys. But they're under more esoteric skills, and that makes sense for them. Like, it makes sense that a robot is not identified with life science, that you would need the skill that's actually involved in crafting technology to identify a robot.
Indeed. And it just makes it so much easier as the GM to just instantly call for the roll. You only have to think about something for half a second, and then it's just on the table. And it's
now, there is an area, I'm sad to say, that the skill system makes things more complicated.
Oh? What's that?
Yeah, and you might disagree with me. Many of the skill checks base their DCs on the CR of the creature you're trying to use them on. Well, and usually that formula is some number plus 1.5 times your CR. And if you're not good at determining 100, yeah, a lot of them do that. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're, and even like a lot of class features do that too. So, if you're not good at calculating 150% of whatever it is you're looking at, you might struggle with this. Like, if you're not a math person, if you're a math person and this is easy for you, then you're not going to struggle with it. But you should know that, like, you don't get that kind of help with the skills. It makes me wish that stat blocks had, like, CR skill bonus written in their stat block, and then that just took the CR and multiplied it by 1.5 for you, and it was just there. But, you know, that's water under the bridge. I recommend for any GMs to just have a table or something of general, you know, CR to skill bonus for using skills and using class features. That would make your life much easier.
So when you're identifying a critter, just like Alex said, you have you have to also make the decision on how common that critter is. If it's a common critter, like a space goblin, then it is 5 plus 1.5 its CR to identify. In Pathfinder, that would have just been its CR. So that's actually harder.
CR skill bonus. Let's stick with it. Let's make it real, guys. We'll spread it all throughout the community. It'll get stuck. It'll get stuck, I tell you. We'll name it together.
Yeah. But the problem is that it worked until the Starship Errata came out and messed up all that.
I mean, I'm not worried about the Starship Errata. What's worried about the skill system? Because really, when you get right down to it, the Starship combat rules are their own beast.
Yeah.
You know, they don't use the skill rules and they don't use the combat rules. They have their own rules for everything. And just sometimes your statistics play into them because it's more fun that way.
If the monster is a normal monster, then it is 10 plus. And then if it's an uncommon monster, it is 15 plus. So, you know, it's an easy thing for the GM to calculate in a hurry. And that 1.5 times math that Alex mentioned is pretty simple to do in your head. And you're going to need to get used to it because Starfinder uses this in a lot of places.
Right. Well, that's kind of my point. Like, assuming that everybody can do that kind of is, it's not great. It would be better if they had the number pre-calculated somewhere, but that's sort of not here and now. If you're not great at math, you should take time to make like a chart or something for yourself because you will use that calculation a lot.
Yeah. It will fit on the side of a character sheet. We're only talking about 20 numbers.
Yeah, but you're the GM. You have a billion other things to track.
Yes.
Let's face it.
If calculating you're the GM, DCs, tape it to the side of your screen.
Yeah. Calculating DCs doesn't matter for the players because in the end, the person who decides, who knows what the CR is and calculates the difficulty is the GM. So players don't really need to know that unless they want to have an idea of what their odds might be.
The other place that skills are used is you also have let's go back here. For most skills, the game provides us plenty of sample DCs. Usually you're going to get around this about Well, the DC he just rattled off there is pretty common for what you're going to see. It's about your level and a half plus 10 is what you're usually trying to hit for appropriate challenge. But the game doesn't do that as hard math in anywhere except the Starship system. So it's not just like climbing a fence just doesn't become harder because you have leveled up. It only becomes harder if the fence is harder, which I understand that in the experience of the players, that might not actually be because the GM is just going to make harder fences to make the challenges more appropriate.
10 times 1.5 which is where we need to go. Item level.
Yes, which is where we need to give some advice to GMs to. When you're paying attention to what skills your character is trying to use, give them easy checks every now and then, just so that they can feel really awesome. A lot of the game is, a lot of the game of Starfinder is about the power fantasy. So just the feeling of awesomeness is required.
And that's a good, and skills are a good place where you can do that, because when you're talking about combat, unless you're throwing lower CR creatures, chances are players are going to have about the same chance to hit something of their level at every stage of the game, just because the math is much tighter than Pathfinder's, you know? So, like, it's going to be about the same, and they might not always feel great unless you're varying the difficulty of challenges. So I think in Starfinder, more so than Pathfinder, it's important to make sure you're throwing a couple, you know, things that are one step lower in CR and in general skill difficulty. Make sure you throw in some harder ones, too, so they sweat a little bit. But if your players don't feel cool because, and let's face it, the easiest way to make a player feel cool is to take something, describe it as being really hard, but make it mathematically easy for them to pull off. And if you don't give your players that every now and then, they're going to feel like the fact that they are getting better doesn't matter because everything else around them is getting better. It's kind of like the low-level Skyrim problem, where you level up and you get bonuses, but everything else is keeping pretty much the same pace without much variance, so you don't actually feel like you're getting much better.
Which is going to, I'm going to shine a light on this in a second, but this sort of design where the skills are constantly scaling based without consideration of the characters is where you could have the opposite of the Skyrim problem. You could have, or the worst version of the Skyrim problem, you could have the Oblivion problem. If you remember, so in there was a video game called Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and in it, it automatically leveled the creatures based on as the character gained ranks in their skills. But the problem was it was very easy under that game system to level yourself up unintentionally and to not be a very optimized character to the point in which the challenges you faced quickly out-leveled any hope you had of meeting it. To where it was often more advantageous to build your character so that their class skills were intentionally chosen to be ones they never touched, and they basically built like inverse bizarro world characters so that the game would not outscale them. And there were many, many patches and fan-made mods in order to address this at later times and fix it. So this is another caution as to why you shouldn't automatically just keep making the DCs to match the 50% average what roles they can make. But let's go back. Totally. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. We need to, in Starfinder, every class has a lot of skills. This in Pathfinder, in previous versions of the game, it was real easy to build yourself into a corner where if you made a typical fighter, for instance, and you dumped Int because you made a typical fighter, then you had one whole skill point for your whole life. You could level up one skill to match your character level, and that was it.
Yeah. You could.
And in Starfinder, that's not a problem. Not only does every class have a rather respectable skill list, every class also has at least 4 skill points level. So even if you made the big dumb soldier and you gave that character a dumped Int, you would still have 3 skills, at least 3, which is 3 times more than your medieval barbarian great 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 aunt.
Yeah, totally. And you know, another thing in Starfinder is Starfinder doesn't give you bonuses or advantages for making your ability scores low. So In Pathfinder, it might feel like the best way to make a fighter is to dump int because it's your worst stat, and you get more points to put in other places for dumping it. Mm-hmm. But in Starfinder, if you choose to take a flaw, then you just have a flaw, and you got to live with it, kind of like the real world. And if when you get right down to it, that means that generally speaking, I feel like less players are going to be taking that 8-6 int. And generally speaking, they're going to have more skill points just because the game isn't making them feel that the optimal way to play is to be a big dumb fighter.
The other big change that you're going to see or need to get used to is there's not a whole lot of ways to get bonuses to your skills. You can take the feat, or you can get bonus to certain skills from your class, such as the technomancer and the mechanic getting better at computers as they level up, and the operative getting better at a whole bunch of stuff as they level
getting up. Getting better at everything.
Yes. So a lot of those bonuses don't stack, and so you can get the toolkits, and you can get the high stat bonuses, and you can even get your class bonus, but there's the math is so much tighter. So there's going to be a much more secure upper ceiling. It's really hard to do things like build characters that can hit like 40 DCs at level 2. That's just not something that can happen under the tight math of Starfinder.
It very, very much so. Mm-hmm. Boosting DCs is very difficult in Starfinder. Mm-hmm. There's like, what, one feat that does it, and then your ability score?
Yep, and the feat doesn't stack with the class ability.
The class ability?
If you have... I might have
missed... We're both talking about spell focused, right?
Yeah, with skill focus. Skill focus does not... I thought we were talking about
spell DCs. Sorry.
No. Skill focus does not stack with your class ability your class abilities usually. So if you have like the Technomancer's bonus to computer skills, it will not stack with the feats skill focus. So you can't just layer those on top to become the uberest. I'm going to hit every DC on a 2+ skill check.
Yeah. And honestly, I know there are some people who are upset about it, mm-hmm. but when we're talking game design, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Just because if your GM has to design the DCs so that they have to basically challenge you who have like plus 10 higher than the guys who don't have your specialization, then basically they're building entire counters just to challenge you. Mm-hmm. And that's not fun for the other people. And I mean, it might be fun for you dominating everything, but you're going to get bored real quick.
And
so,
this is something you actually have to deal with fairly frequently in other games. Even like we're comparisons to Pathfinder are unavoidable here. So that's something that in Pathfinder, it was really easy. Like I've got a barbarian who gets a plus 30 something to intimidate, never fails that roll ever. I've got a mesmerist who can never fail a bluff check against anything in a PFS scenario. It just is statistically not possible.
Oh man, have I ever told you about my stupid investigator? Oh. He's my he went through Eyes of the Ten. I'm without spoiling that adventure path at all because it's heresy to do so. He has. One, he rolls a d20 on his perception checks. He gets to add d10 because he has amazing inspiration and focus inspiration. Mm-hmm. He has max ranks, class skill, and Eyes of the Eagle. So it ends up being that at his current level, he gets something like a plus 20, a d20 plus a d10 plus 29 to perception checks. And because I have trap spotting, if he goes within 10 feet of a trap, my GM rolls all of that for me because I have free inspiration on perception and do it on every perception check. So he rolls all that for me. And since the typical DC of a trap is 25, unless you like spend CR to make it higher, I usually find them. And then for disabling traps, I roll a d20 and add 30.
And that extremely ridiculous counting of a broken skill system is exactly why Starfinder is as tight on its math as possible.
The best my investigator is level 13.
The best you can do, and in some cases you're going to want to do this. When we start talking about the starship rules, or if you're going to focus on hacking, you really do want to super invest in the relevant skills. you're the best you can do is have skill focus or be a class that gets the bonus, because they do not stack, so do not get skill focus if you are the class that gets the bonus in that, because that becomes irrelevant fairly quickly.
Yep.
And retraining in Starfinder is much harder than it was in Pathfinder. Then you want to get a high stat. So you want to get an 18, start with a 16 and get an 18 in the relevant attribute. This usually lines up with your class anyway. Your class is usually good at things that its attribute is good at. And then you want to get the augments to increase your stat higher. And you can get a toolkit to get a +2 bonus when using that skill. And that's it. And that's all. So the bonuses, the options you can do are fairly clear and straightforward and easy to find, and they have an upper limit. And even if you don't do all of those, you can still pretty regularly keep up with the challenges by just making sure you put the skill point in the thing every level, and it's a class skill, and it's something that agrees with one of your good attributes.
True story, Param.
Yep. Now, a tip I can give with to GMs that want to better use skills in their games, and actually to focus on how you want to run your games, the best trick I can give for your GM is when you get their characters for the first time, look where they put their points. Those are giant flashing neon signs of, hey GM, I want to do this sort of thing in this game. If you notice that a character has got like a bunch of diplomacy and they've got a bunch of profession teaching and science and stuff, and it's on a soldier, that soldier is basically telling you, I want to have a lot of social encounters. If you see somebody with a whole bunch of acrobatics and hacking and stealth, they want to do spy stuff. And if you see them investigating, all of them going into piloting and engineering and stuff, they say they want to go to the stars and get on that bridge. There is no easier way to learn how to make your players happy than looking what they put on their character sheet. They are literally telling you exactly what they want to do.
That's a true story. We're doing Dead Sons now with James GMing. Ooh. We just hit level 3.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I don't think we've talked much about our Dead Sons game on the show. It's weird. But we just hit level 3, and in our very first Starship combat, we discovered that out of the four of us, my soldier was the only person with ranks in piloting. And so when level 3 rolled around, we were like, okay, well, we all get a feat, and we all get skill ranks. Are we going to, like, change this up so that somebody else can be the pilot, so it's not our soldier who has a 12 dexterity? And I was like, actually, I was going to take skill focus piloting this level and be even better at it. And they were like, okay. I was like, eh, I'm a soldier. I've got enough feats to take the skill focus one time. So now I have like a +10 in our last Starship combat. I was literally doing like figure eights around the enemy ships. It was great. Oh, it was so great. I felt so amazing. That corpse of a pilot could not keep up with my amazing maneuvers.
Yes. And that brings up a good point. Besides the obvious use of skills that a lot of you are probably already used to that have played similar games or previous games, Starfinder is not revolutionary in its the way it handles skills for any game, nope. Much less D20 games. There are two major subsystems of the game that make heavy use of the skill system. And one is, as Alex was just talking about, the Starship rules rely almost exclusively on your skills.
They don't really rely on your checks and your class features and your feats as much as your ranks.
Yeah.
Like me having a skill focus piloting matters. Like I get to add those bonuses, but like my piloting ranks also get added into like the ship's defenses. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is something that my cool feats and abilities don't, you know, really sync with. But man, oh man, is it really great to always win initiative because I have this feat, and so far we haven't fought an enemy starship with, like, an operative as the pilot yet. That's going to be the guy who beats me. Han Solo is going to be beating me.
And we have gone through a fantastic episode already if you can go back and check it out, where we go through all the details and teach you exactly how to do
stuff. Millennial Falcon tried its best. Oh. It really did.
And then, so if you want to Starship, go back a couple of episodes, listen to that. It'll explain every single thing. We're not going to go into that too much here. But there is one other subsystem of the game that heavily uses skills, and that is the computer rules.
Yeah.
There was a version of this game in which computers were just locks and static DC checks, and you use them much in the way of disabled device. Heck, there's a version of this game where the only skill that exists is disabled device. There's some potential other world one where computers are not even more than a single paragraph throwaway. But this is a sci-fi fantasy game, emphasis on the sci-fi for this discussion, and the idea of the hacker is important, and it's important to the extent that we already today computers control so much of our lives. I mean, this podcast is only possible because of the very many advances in technology that allow two random people in different parts of the world to broadcast our rambling thoughts to you about Starfinder. But
no, we would all take shells and line them with string and talk into the cups.
The adventurer hacker is such a trope in sci-fi that they basically add them to every single show or movie or police procedural in existence that it has to exist. So of course the game has to support it. And the Starfinder system is definitely more advanced than just here's a DC and roll it. But it's not so advanced as something, say, Shadowrun, where you have an entire other alternate reality version of the game that is played in the computers just for the hackers, which would be a problem because that has the systems like that are notorious for basically saying, okay, and now the hacker's going to have some fun. Everybody else go get some chips.
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of letting the rogue go off by his or herself stealthing.
Yeah, it's almost exactly like that. So the computer system in Starfinder matters a lot because starships have computers. Most of the technological locks you're going to see are going to be computer-based. It's the future. Everything's controlled by a computer, from the light bulbs to your potted plant.
And if you have a strange potted plant.
If you have, oh man, not even strange, man. You should see some of these LED nonsense that exists in the world. Just spend a few hours just binge watching Linus Tech Tips, and you will see that they will add computers and LEDs to just about anything.
Alexa, hack the world.
No. So if you do want to get your Alexa to hack things in Starfinder, the thing you need to understand is that computers each have a tier. And boy, do they love making tiers in Starfinder. To be more specific, computers in Starfinder are rated on a tier from 1 to 10, with 1 being the easiest. And each of those tiers has an associated difficulty class for hacking them. So when you roll computers, if you're using your computers and you just want to use a computer that you have access to, it's just a simple DC 10, and you can take a 20 even if you're untrained in computers, as long as you have the appropriate access. Anybody can walk up to a computer and get it to do the thing it's supposed to do. Where the computer skill comes in is when you want to get the computer to do something it wasn't designed to do. Most of the time this is hacking, as in getting to do something that other people don't want you to do with it, but the same rules apply for when you want to modify a piece of computer to do something extra or neat. Mm-hmm. So the DC is the computer's tier from 1 to 10 times 4 instead of 1.5.
Oof, yeah.
Plus 13.
New formula.
So it's 13 plus 4 times the computer tier. So this is a really high DC to have to hit. And before the show, me and Alex were just trying to see, how do you possibly hit the tier 10's DC 53? And it turns out it's not so bad if you've been maxing your character and you have the computer kit. You bought the max augment. What was it? If you max the attribute and you bought the max augment and you had the the one of the three classes, Operative, Mechanic, or Technomancer, that has a +6 bonus at level 20, and you had the kit to get that +2, you could make it on a 12.
Yes.
Yes. And if you had three friends that could aid another, and they could be the worst hackers in the world, they just had to roll a 10.
That's true.
Then you just need to roll a 6. So I'm thinking
if you don't have all of those things, like let's say you slipped up on your intelligence and you only have like, what would it be, an 18 instead of a 24? Mm-hmm. Like that's going to bump your DC, or an 18 instead of a 22. That's going to automatically increase the DC that you need to hit from 12 to 16. And then, gosh forbid, you didn't go Technomancer or Operative or Mechanic and you don't have that bonus, like, man, that's a +6 you are missing. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I think Envoy can do it with their expertise class feature with computers, but that's a random roll. You could roll a 1 on your die and not be good enough. The computer system for hacking the tier 10 computers assume that you are the best of the best to get it done.
Mm-hmm. And fun things happen when you fail. With computers, that's mostly how the system gets complex, is things that's happen when you fail.
That's a very strange way to say countermeasures make your day miserable, Param.
No, countermeasures can do so many fun things.
I mean, if you're a GM, sure.
So basically, computers are very complex traps in Starfinder.
Oh, yeah.
And, very. And so they have the DC. You try to roll to hit the DC. And if you want to get... And if you want to do cooler things, hitting 5 above the DC lets you add features. Hitting, 20 above the DC lets you gain permanent root level access.
Yeah.
Which is basically like if you get root level access, you can just do anything you want with a computer. But it's actually surprisingly restrictive in how hacking works in the future. You have to have physical access to the machine most of the time, or be able to access a network the machine is on. So yeah, a lot of things are going to be on the infosphere, but it takes into account that if a corporation is paranoid and smart about things, they've air-gapped their equipment. Air-gapping means that a computer is not hooked up to any other computer except by the air between it, and there's no wireless networking. It just means there's nothing between two sets of computers. This is an extremely effective security measure, just like it would be in real life, where you have to somehow get access to that machine. Unless you're a mechanic, and mechanics are the only class in the game that can somehow wirelessly hack that thing that's not hooked up to anything.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's true.
But this
But on the plus side, if you wanted to be Nicolas Cage trying to steal the Declaration of Independence in the future, you could totally do that.
The future Declaration of Laser Independence.
No, it wouldn't be the Declaration of Independence. It would be whatever the name of that document that the Pact World signed, the Pact World's Treaty. If you wanted to steal the Pact World's Treaty, Nicolas Cage in the future stealing the Pact World's Treaty.
Yes, so if you're wanting to, so go on with it, the explanation.
Yes, if you wanted to do that, because like in National Treasure, he's got to like go into the banquet and he's got to like steal all everybody's fingerprints and like put them into the door and then go all the way down in and like meanwhile, his hacker buddy has to run a line using a computer into the building he's trying to hack so he can like plug it into the mainframe like from where he is. And I feel like that's the kind of feel this is going for, because if you can hack someone from the other side of the world with few to no consequences, that's not really as fun.
No, it's really not fun in a world where that is true right now.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, complete aside, we do not have the countermeasures we should against
hacking. No. I want to be able to remotely just shock the living daylights out of people that try to mess with my computer. Oh, we'll get to that in a minute. But you're right. It encourages that sort of adventure. This is a reason that you can, if you want to be a super hacker, that's why just short-range teleports become awesome. And being able to summon, the Technomancer is being able to summon up the remote hack junk bots and send them in to do its hacking for him is cool. This is why it's neat that the mechanic just has to get close to the computer and can do it wirelessly. And why the Operative gets to use those sleek ninja skills that she's developed. This puts Fun the adventure fact, back into the tech aspect of things.
Yeah. So fun comment. Apparently in our really cool No Direction Discord server that everybody should join, one of our people went and made a skill, CR skill bonus table and posted it after hearing me talk about it here in this episode, like live. Pretty cool. That's a good time to remind people that we have a live audience.
Yes, indeed. No Direction Beyond, just like No Direction, is filmed in front of a live Twitch audience every other Tuesday at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. I had to do the math there because usually it's 5 because No Direction starts an hour later than No Direction Beyond. And you can get on their Twitch chat and ask us questions throughout the show. We'll be collecting those questions and comments and addressing them as we record.
Do we have any questions or comments right
now? I have not been collecting them because I hadn't given the speech yet. And I totally should have given the speech a little bit earlier. Irvina says, so that's something I had an issue with in my last game, Param. How do you determine the rarity of creatures?
Well, so you know what? Can I get my general rule and then you can give your rule?
Sure.
My general rule is that if the players have seen the creature before in that adventure, mm-hmm. I usually drop it. Or not even in that. If they've seen it in the adventure, I don't make them make new checks. If they've seen it in a previous book and they don't remember, I give them the lower DC. Or if it's a creature that's like specifically called out as being very populous, like how mm-hmm. space goblins are all over the place. Mm-hmm. If a creature is unique, on the other hand, or named, I make it the hard DC. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a creature that says something specific like, nobody's seen this creature in 10,000 years. Basically, I go off of the flavor text for when deciding when to not use the standard mm-hmm. and use the standard pretty much every other time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually don't factor in how many times my players have seen it. It's just simply the rarity of the creature, either through its flavor text. Basically, I just ask myself, if you lived in the area this thing haunts, how likely are you to even know it's there? And if it's something that the locals or the area have seen a lot, then it's common, especially if it's in a lot of different areas. If it's really regional and only the people in the area would know about it, I just use normal because, you know, you'd have to be there or know or read about it or research something like this specifically. So I just use the normal. And then for the rare stuff, it's usually this thing's unique. There's no way on earth anybody knows about this unless it's from some ancient tomb buried at the bottom of some long forgotten kingdom's library stack.
And that's a very difficult check.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why it's 15 plus, not 10. The extra 5, it's extra 5 is for antiquity.
Fair. How about any other questions?
Okay. That's all I'm seeing so far, but I'm likely missing some. So I'll go through this as we go on. In the meantime, let's return back to the computers.
So, side note. Mm-hmm. Did you know that there are some traps that you can put inside computers?
Yes. Traps are
isn't
awesome.
That so cool?
It
like,
is.
There's one in the core rulebook that is like my favorite trap ever. Oh. I think the game is more fun when you do stuff to players that change how they think their character looks like, because that makes players uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, damage doesn't make you feel uncomfortable because damage is healed. It goes away. And it's like seeing the little sprite in Final Fantasy take damage. It's like, oh, well, you still look the same. You're fine. But like you throw something like a polymorph on them, or like you hit them like with some sort of scar, or you chop off a limb, or like even just a little finger. And then all of a sudden they're thinking about how their character looks differently, and they didn't have control over that, and it makes them uncomfortable and they want to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. I know in Dead Sons, my soldier got infested by a disease that puts like these larvae spawn in his body, and I was really freaking out about it. Like, no, we can't adventure until I have all of these baby larvae out of my body. And everyone else is like, dude, it's just a disease, you're fine. I'm like, I'm diseased. But along those lines, there's a trap in this book. It is my favorite trap. It's the one that digitizes you and like uploads you into like a CPU. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Go on.
I hope I'm remembering that this is in here right, because I thought for sure that somebody would have said, yo, I remember this one. It's this trap that like if you trigger it, it like scans you and then basically disassembles you and stores you as data on like a data jack. Like, it's like Trap the Soul, but it puts you in, it puts your body and soul instead of inside of a soul gem like in Pathfinder, it puts you on like a thumb drive somewhere.
So Cryptwalker is correct here. It's just Tron then.
It's so cool though.
It is cool.
It's the greatest.
That's why the Tron was an excellent movie, a couple of good games, and the world's best Daft Punk music video.
That is, that last one is especially true.
Indeed.
Although it's really funny because whenever I have the soundtrack, the Tron soundtrack, and we use it for Starfinder sometimes, mm-hmm. and like people don't realize that like Daft Punk has more range than just techno, because mm-hmm. like a lot of like the dramatic music is just like instrumental stuff, and people go, "Is this really on the Tron soundtrack?" And I'm like, "Yeah, this is that scene where Flynn turns himself over to the blah blah blah," mm-hmm. and they're like, "But this isn't techno." I'm like, yeah, they're musicians. They have range. They can Indeed. Do more than just one sound.
Most good musicians have studied a lot of different styles before they, you know, are employable.
Totally.
So let's talk about what happens when you fail your computer checks, because of course you're going to fail some computer checks. Adventurers are much more fun when things fail than when they all go perfectly.
You go into the Digiverse!
Yes. So what happens when it starts to loudly play the Tron soundtrack and alert everybody? Those are called countermeasures. Okay, so a computer can have a set of countermeasures that will happen when you fail their checks. This is so it lists a few basic countermeasures that they can have. So the most common one is alarm, because it's cheap. So the most immediate thing is you failed your check, and suddenly people know. And since this is Starfinder, they're likely people with guns. And lots you don't want people with guns knowing that you failed to hack their computer, because then they like to use those guns.
Oh, they love to use those guns. I really like the spell chip countermeasure.
Yes, the spell chip is basically a spell stored inside the computer that it casts on the person that tried to hack it.
Do you know what's really fun? Mm-hmm. Putting a summon creature spell for robots inside of your computer. Ooh. And then the robots come out. Oh. And they're...
I think it'd be much more fun to summon that darn evil computer demon we invented on the episode on the Alien Archive.
I mean, that'd be great, but we'd have to like make it into a real stat block and add it to the list first.
Oh, but you're a GM. You're allowed to do that.
That's true. Make your little computer guy, and he goes around and he shrinks all of your PCs.
We need to quit mentioning this, or we're going to have to commit to actually making that darn thing a stat block.
Oh, man, I'll do it. I have a company. I can make it.
Oh. Go forth. Go forth. Do it, Alex.
All right.
You just got a blog post taken care of.
Yes.
Okay, so the other one is a fake shell. Now, this is something that I like doing in real life when I'm staging computers, where if you want a secure computer, one of the more fun ways to do it is to have a login that when it fails goes to a completely virtualized version of that computer that doesn't really do anything. You're just screwing around in there trying to do things, and it says you're doing them fine because it pretends like you've got access, but instead it's just spinning its wheels. There's no data in there. It's a completely fake version of the computer. This is something very commonly done at customs checks and stuff like that, because people don't like people invading their privacy. Then, of course, there is... let's just go straight to the fun one. The shock grid. Right. If you want to do an insane amount of damage, I mean, for just the low price of 500 credits, you can put a shock grid on your computer that will deal 8d6 damage to anybody that fails their checks. I mean, ow! And it's within 10 feet. You can get the hacker and all their buddies. And that's a lot of damage for such a low-level trap fail.
So, can I use my designer intuition to tell you why they probably did that?
Okay, go for it.
So... the average on 8d6 is going to be, let's say, two of them would be 7, so 7 times 4 is 28. That is going to knock out a first-level character. It's going to drop them from full stamina to 0. Mm-hmm. So very likely the logic is that that's designed so that if you fail, it can knock you to 0, force you to spend that resolve point to like not die, mm-hmm. and basically take you prisoner, because now you're unconscious on the floor and the guards are coming in to take you away. It's like it's really good for that sort of vibe. But you need the higher tier ones in order to stay competitive against higher level players.
Yep. At the top, if you want to deal just double damage for 16d6, it's going to cost you 50,000 credits for a rank 5 shot grid. Then you can, it does all the other fun things that you can imagine. You can firewall off particular parts of the computer. You can wipe out the data if they fail the rolls. And that's what the GM is supposed to do. And that's part of the thing. You want the people to approach the computer. They need to start rolling to figure out what the countermeasures are going to be so they can deal with them. They need to start rolling to get access to the computer and make it more of an event when it is necessary, so that you can build these custom computers when, you know, they're about to hack the Gibson and they're all in their phone booths with their spray painted Tandys. And then you just make it a rank 2 lock when it doesn't matter. And it just needs to be a simple skill check, and I'm done.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree with that one, sir.
Indeed. All right. Any more questions from chat? I'm not seeing any.
We must be good or boring.
Chat is active. Chat is hopping. All right, so we're getting really close to wrapping up the episode, guys, so if you can, get any more questions in. Okay, Alex, there is one thing about the skills in Starfinder that I'm running into a lot that I would like to hear your opinions on.
I love giving my unpopular opinions.
I'm noticing that in a lot of my groups, because everybody's getting a lot of skill points, and because the skills themselves are pared down to just the useful ones in broader categories, a lot of times where there's just complete skill overlap, where it's really hard for any character to stand out because everybody has, or a significant number of people have, the skills. So that the person who thought they were going to be the hacker is actually like, well, there's five of you that are just as good at being the hacker, and the technomancer or the mechanic that really banked on it, well, the soldier's just as good as hacking as you. So, oops.
Yeah, so I think part of that problem is that if you invest in a skill at low level, like even if it's not one of your class's bonus skills, you grab skill focus and you're going to, and if you have the same ability score, you're going to be just as good as the other guy who doesn't have that a bonus until they get to like, gosh, above 10th level when their class insight bonus goes above skill focus. Mm-hmm. And at least in our home Dead Sons group, we haven't run into that problem. But the only reason we haven't run into that problem is because we're a four-person party. Mm-hmm. So I think that the skill system in Starfinder is designed around the assumption that you have four people playing at the table. Mm-hmm. And I think that Starfinder Society's assumption that there are six people up into the table works for combat, but it makes skills more difficult because people are, like you said, bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. Complicating that issue is the fact that professions are not hard-coded to be able to do anything, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's basically a GM fiat rule that says if you have a profession skill that makes sense, you know, do the thing. It's cool, but I think that a lot of players still feel like perception is not a great option. And if you are not an operative, you don't really feel like you have the skill ranks to just kind of put into a flavorful profession. And when you get right down to it, the operative is already so good at skills. They're not the ones who need to be, like, kind of shoveling skills there. I think that what you are describing is going to be a problem with Starfinder's skill system going forward. I think that designing for a four-person group is understandable, but perhaps not helpful in the sense that there's not a whole lot of way to make your character really stand out skill-wise, you know? I think that's kind of inevitability of the system where you have all of these skill ranks, like you increase the number of skill ranks and you condense the skills. So naturally those are going to spread in more places. And I think that, you know, when we think of, you know, modern gamers today, we're all pretty good at computers. So we want our characters to be good at computers. The hacker fantasy is very real. A lot of those skills that get overlapped in a lot are things that are very core to the future sci-fi game experience, I would say. I don't know if there's a very good way to to overcome that problem.
Well, I'm running into this problem a lot because the primary way I play is Starfinder Society. And when you're, especially people that came over from Pathfinder Society, know to like stack the skills and get a diverse selection of skills because those are so important during your average society game.
Yeah.
Because they write them that way, especially the knowledges and diplomacy and that sort of stuff. They're written that way so that, you know, it wouldn't just be a hack and slash, and it's a way that they can codify the adventures and have them pre-written and run consistently. I'm getting a lot of characters with very broad skill groups, and so they overlap a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't really do anything about that in society. I'm just really encouraging a whole lot of Aiden and others.
And I think that kind of compounds to, so I hate to go back and pick on the mechanic like I did for literally an hour and 30 minutes in a previous episode, but I think that the mechanic is a class that really suffers from that, because in Pathfinder, there were more ways to be good at skills than just having the biggest bonus, you know? You could have class features like Trap Spotter that lets you auto-check things. You could have other class features that, you know, change the way you use skills, like a rogue's skill unlock abilities. And Starfinder doesn't really have a way to be good at skills other than to have those skills. And usually the skills that you would want to improve and take those really cool, unique abilities in, they're directly competing for their limelight with combat abilities. Mm-hmm. A lot of the skill classes in Starfinder don't get combat abilities as base class features. They have to pick them as options.
Right.
And that means that, like,
we noticed that when we were talking about the mechanic, we noticed that when we were talking about the Technomancer, that to be good at the hacking aspect or the engineering aspect, you were literally giving up really cool picks for your combats, like with the Technomancer especially.
It makes me wish that more classes were like the Envoy, and that the Envoy separates skills and combat. Improvisations are almost all combat based, and the versatility talents are almost expertise talents. The expertise talents are almost all universally skill focused and improving how you use skills. So I think if the classes had a little more of that, it would be less of a problem. But for now, we're kind of stuck in this very real territory where characters have the same number of skills and they're all covered in across the way, and to become really good at a skill comes at the cost of your combat effectiveness, when arguably most of the things that you would use to get better at skills are not as essential as not dying or in combat or killing the other guy first. So I think that's going to be a design issue in Starfinder as the system ages. We'll have to see whether or not they can figure out how to solve that, because it's tricky. It's very, very tricky.
In the meantime, a solution that works for me when I'm in a situation that isn't society, where if you're playing society, your choices as GM are really limited because you have to play the game a certain way. There's a lot of forward MIDI for how the adventures, so that everybody has the same possibility of experiences throughout the table, so that the whole concept of a worldwide organized play is even possible. So the GM doesn't have a whole lot of freedom in how they're allowed to wing things or alter things. They're really not allowed to alter the written stuff almost at all. You are allowed to improvise and do typical being a good GM stuff, but things like changing the skill checks just is not how that's done. But when you are able to be a GM and you're running something custom, or you're running a AP that you're allowed to modify and you're feeling comfortable with, what I find has worked in this sort of situation is it becomes a problem when the PCs are always together and they're always allowed to choose who attempts the skill checks or is primary on the skill check based on, you know, who is the best at it. Where you can sort of turn that into a strength of the system is if they don't get that choice. You divide them up. You have a person who has to make those persuasion checks because they're the ones that are talking to this person while the computer back there is exploding. And my goodness, the soldier was the only one near there. He's going to have to somehow figure out how to use space duct tape to keep the engine from overloading. And you just sort of make it to where people who you intentionally target people to make checks that the other people aren't allowed to just come in and say, well, I'll just do that because I'm better. You put them in situations where they have to make the check, or you split them up, or you give the people different priorities that have to be done simultaneously, so that even if your best computer user is busy over dealing with keeping the laser spikes that are coming down from the ceiling and going to kill everybody from doing the killing everybody part of that program, then somebody's going to have to activate the assault droid on the other side of the room in order to fight off these swarms of alien tentacle cockroaches that are going to eat your brains.
Yeah. You know what it kind of reminds me of? You know, have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
Yes, I love that movie.
You know in the opening scene where Rocket and Peter are fighting over who gets to pilot the ship?
Yes, that is a fun
That's
situation.
Basically the issue.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's basically the issue. Where you got two guys who are really skilled and they want to be in the limelight, and they're just fighting over it, and so they end up crashing and burning. At least for me, I think one of the easiest things is, like, really think about how many people you're going to invite into your Starfinder home game. And when you are inviting people, try to make sure that everybody has, if not a unique skill, a unique combination that makes them shine in specific circumstances. So, like, you know, maybe if your operative is going to try to hack a computer to find the cure for some sort of illness, right? Maybe, you know, you have the choice between the operative who's much better at computers, or similar to what Param's saying, you could have the mechanic who has, in addition to having a computer skill that's similar, maybe a little lower, but they also have knowledge of life science. And maybe you're like, okay, well, you need to attempt both of these checks at the same time. And if you're not trained in life science, you can't hack this computer, because hacking into the computer doesn't mean anything if you don't know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. You know? And so that way, making it so you need multiple people to – really what it comes down to is like a skill challenge system, mm-hmm. where, you know, you have multiple ways that the PCs need to be able to contribute to the same goal using multiple skills. Mm-hmm. And so that you know what PCs have what skills and who can go where. Because, again, with this system, it is a great system for making sure that everybody feels cool and has options they can do, but those options start bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. And – you need to make sure that people have different strengths and different weaknesses, just like in any group. And that's honestly a luxury Pathfinder Society usually can't afford, or Starfinder Society in this case, usually can't afford, because you never know who you're going to sit down at the table with. In that regards, it might be helpful at the beginning, as a GM, to sit down at the beginning of a Starfinder scenario, since they tend to be faster than Pathfinder ones, mm-hmm. to say, okay, guys, why don't you take a minute to review your skills and assign yourselves some general roles so that you're not so that everybody has a chance to use them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in a real world, you know, situation, if you're going to immobilize a team, everybody's going to have a job to do. Mm-hmm. Even if multiple people have similar skills, that's not your job. That's my job. That's part of what I'm going to do when we run into this issue. Mm-hmm. And your plan B in case I get shot down or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And this is also a word of advice to those operatives out there. We know who you are. To Max Dent, because we know you did, and you have literally every single skill, because that's possible.
Oh, it's so easy to do.
You have literally every single skill. Be good to the other players and let them actually use their skills. You don't have to make every single skill check. You're going to get to make a bunch. You're going to be awesome at it, but, you know, nobody likes it when somebody hogs all the limelight. And this is just as bad as when the soldier basically takes over all the combats, or any overpowered, maxed out character in any game just makes all the other characters trivial. It's just don't be a jerk.
I think we might be poking into something that might not be the best about Starfinder as a system. Mm-hmm. The fact that because everybody has such clear roles, like, by design, your class is not going to shine in certain situations, mm-hmm. like, unless you get really lucky with the numbers, and that doesn't always feel great. So just remember that, like, if you're the mechanic and you're sitting in a combat and you don't feel that cool,
because you didn't build the awesome bot.
Yeah. So, like, maybe it's okay then to go with full powered engineering and just show how great you are in that one area. And other players remember that, like, these classes aren't like Pathfinder classes where you have very clear strengths and weaknesses in each class. Mm-hmm. Like, or not strengths and weaknesses. The classes in Pathfinder are better at generalizing than the classes in Starfinder are. Like, if you are a soldier, your class is designed innately to be better at damage than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like, literally everybody else.
And there's not a lot of options or the breadth of system that exists in Pathfinder and other games to alter the basic chassis. We're still dealing with just the one official book.
And if we're honest, I'm not entirely sure that, at least for many years, options to make the other classes better at other roles are going to come out. Like,
I mean, that's going to need to be a lot of books published.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're thinking about it, like, this is a system designed by the team or that made, like, archetypes. Like, they'll let you take a class and really expand its focus. Mm-hmm. So for them to go in and create very narrow, this is what this class is best at lines, that makes me feel like those are lines that they probably don't want to cross. Mm-hmm. Like, this just might be how the game is, and we as players need to realize that and keep our etiquette in mind when it comes to how we play this game. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's not saying that, like, if you sit down at a Starfinder Society table and you and the other guy both have max computers, that you should completely sacrifice your ability to make computers checks for the other guy. But maybe you should think about, okay, if that's the thing that this mechanic is best at, and I still have, like, trick attack and literally 12 other skills on top of him, maybe I should try to let him have these every now and then, because that's his thing.
Yeah. And then, and honestly, we're just talking about a skill version of the same don't hog the limelight all the time advice we give any situation. If you're the best role player at the table, that doesn't mean you have to take over every single social scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Totally. Okay. Well, we are coming up on time. But so before we go, I want to give some shout outs, mostly to our network at NoDirectionPodcast.com. If you're just watching the shows, you're only getting half the best content out there. We have a regular series of blogs from some fantastic authors on an almost daily basis. Yes, Alex writes quite a lot of them, and he does very good.
I don't know. I write as many as Louis. Like,
yes, Louis has been amazing. Again, his monster series has been some of our most popular. And, of course, we have the magnificent Marlowe team and the Ask Dova Queen and Ryan's Craziness, as well as James's Code Switch, which has been...
Everyone, take your hat off, because James is currently sick. He couldn't be here tonight.
That was going to be my next shout out. You might notice that there's just the two of us today. James is not gone forever. He just temporarily has the plague, and so was not able to join us for this episode. We hope to have him back on the next No Direction Beyond.
I'm pretty sure that he'll be okay in 2 weeks. James bounces back from illnesses way quicker than I do. Cool. I get sick, I'm out for like a week. Like, I am dead. Do not come knocking at my door. But James, I was talking to him earlier. He was like, yeah, I slept all day. I think I'm going to be good to go back tomorrow. I'm like, oh my God, take another day off, man. He's like, nah. It's funny. Very funny.
But either way, despite his amazing constitution and fort saves, we really wish that James recovers quickly and effectively.
Yes.
All right. So until next time, I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
And I'm Alexander Gunas, the Everyman Gamer.
And remember to go beyond with no direction.